I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sports ad-free. That's amazon.com/sports ad-free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
I've just read one of the best comments below. I'm sorry, but Lawrence doesn't have great football knowledge. He's annoying. His jokes are absolutely terrible, and he thinks he's funny and cool.
Wow.
This is the best bit now. This gets even better. He says, he's the least funny across all football-related channels. And it's even better. It says, not having it.
It is Thursday, which means it's time for the Front Three Q&A with me, Adam Bolt, with the one and only Lawrence McKenna.
Yeah, it is.
Chris Hennage is here as well.
Evening.
As is Statman Dave.
It's the big one, the Front Three Blogging Awards.
Indeed. Guys.
Or otherwise known as Dave's Bitter Evening.
We're not at the Blogging Awards, in case you guys haven't noticed. Were we invited, Lawrence? I think we were invited.
Right, we're actually invited, yeah. But we
never missed this year.
That, well, yeah, I mean,
bitterness. Like,
there'll be other years. I think. I also just think it's. Anyway, should we? Yeah.
Yeah. Let's get straight in to.
I do think it is a love. I think it is a lovely night, and I think a lot of people really enjoy themselves. I think it's lovely. Some of these people. I think it's lovely. Some of these people can get out of their bedrooms. Mm. I think at the same time, that's a night. All right. I think it's lovely that some of these people get out, sort of meet all the other people in the industry. It's a lovely place to go and meet people.
It is.
I think next year when we're a little bit, it's not the winning that counts, it's the taking part. Mm. And next year we will mobilise the troops.
Ooh. Wow. Okay. There's a promise for you. Anyway, guys, you've been sending in your questions on Twitter. We're going to get through as many as we can tonight. But before we do that, it is, of course, time for Comment of the Week. Guys, you've been sending in your reviews on iTunes, some great ones this week. One coming in all the way from Australia saying, Dave is my fave, but the chemistry between you lads is unbeatable. So he sort of complimented all of us.
Dave, when did you get a VPN?
Harry in New Zealand said, superb, love this podcast. Adam seems like the nicest Spurs fan ever. That's nice. Best podcast ever. Rapolo from the USA said, love that guy Chris. Love that he's in the hole now. Great work, guys. But comment of the week has to go to the man who from the UK, who titled his review Audible Chocolate. It's quite a long review. He says, having stumbled upon this podcast about a week ago, I expected to listen to three gentlemen expressing their mildly biased opinions on football. To my surprise, this podcast exceeded my expectations by far. The lush voice of Adam Lallana's thick-boned doppelganger.
Oh my god.
Interesting.
That's a backhanded compliment if I've ever heard.
Harsh perfect. Provides the necessary structure for the man in possession of the stats to grace us with his thorough tactical insight. The team's libero has captivating stories as well as well thought out opinions that never fail to entertain even for the most demanding of listeners. But no, that was enough. They had to get the best journalist in the game too. The man whose footballing knowledge is as vast as the Atlantic Ocean. The myth hailing from the north to shed light on the darkest corners of the beautiful game. The legend that is Kristen Ducking Hennage. Great podcast. I love all of you. Keep it up. What an exceedingly nice review from the man who from UK. You get comment of the week and thoroughly deserved, it has to be said.
Thoroughly, yeah.
Anyway, let's get in to the questions, guys. So much to talk about this week. Let's start. Rob Allen asks, is the Wayne Rooney reaction over the top? You can't have missed this headline since the England-Scotland game. Turns out Wayne Rooney was sort of having a nice evening. May or may not have gatecrashed a wedding. Maybe he was invited. Maybe he was just at the hotel with England team members. But it seems to have exploded in the last couple of days, Lawrence. You know, the England team are now banned from having nights out. All this sort of stuff. I mean, what do you make of this whole ridiculous situation?
It's been going on for quite a while now, hasn't it? The interesting side was obviously that other people have their comments now. I really enjoyed some of the people who have sort of been saying, I don't see what the problem is, as if somehow, you know, because we all have a hangover when we go to five a side on a Sunday, you know, therefore it's fine if Wayne Rooney's like that. He's also weirdly, I mean, if you go into someone's wedding, Wayne, you know, it's formal dress tonight. Yeah, I'm wearing my England shirt. Right. I mean, yeah, but it's formal dress, Wayne. Yeah, but it's my training top. It's all I've got. And you're like, right, okay. Just sit on the couch, Wayne. You'll be
in that club, to be fair.
No, if
you've ever been fortunate enough to like know a player or have a friend or family, like they do wear the training kit a frightening amount of time.
And I know that because I would be proud of if you know if I had such a.
I think it's laziness as well.
I also just think that it's partly that they're told, look, wear this, and then they probably just don't take many other options because, you know, when you go away in England duty, you probably do. Anyway, the point is that made it worse. If he was in some sort of casual gear, it probably would have been a little bit easier for him to sort of pass it off. But it was the fact that he was sort of, it looks like he's representing England, you know, and I understand all the banter about it and all the jokes and stuff. I appreciated Jurgen Klopp's. Jurgen Klopp said, all the legends drank like devils and smoked like crazy. And then he said, this generation is the most professional generation of footballers. I mean, that is true. They are, you know, they are the most professionalized generation yet. They are. But then at the same time, I sort of get Jurgen Klopp's point. Like, just let him let his hair down. Do you know what I mean? It's once. But at the same time, he is also a professional footballer. He's on so much money. Hmm. And you know, he's very well rewarded for the lifestyle that he leads. We talk as if Wayne Rooney's doing this for the rest of his life. It's very clear that soon that will end and he'll be able to go to as many parties as he wants when he's 34 or 35. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I see the hypocrisy that goes on here because he's earning a lot of money and the defense of him is and also the attack has also been too virulent.
That's the thing, I think, is Dave, I mean, as a Manchester United fan yourself, do you think it's been a bit overblown? Obviously, there's that lack of professionalism from Wayne Rooney, but I think the sort of the scandal that seems to have risen about it, as Lawrence says, has been a bit much.
Yeah, look, listen, I've been to a few nightclubs in my time. I've got pretty drunk
in
my time.
We know.
But unfortunately, I'm not a professional footballer who gets paid £350,000 a week to go around and kick a ball. If I was, I'd potentially take my life in a different way. You know, the points Lawrence made about him being in his training shirt and so forth, he is England captain. Unfortunately, he can't go and get absolutely blasted, you know, midweek when he's got a Premier League game at the weekend. Unfortunately, that can't happen. He
if
can
this
do
was
that
Marcelo,
when he
though, do you think it would be different? Do you think it would be different if people, like, do you know what I mean? If it was like Patrice Evra going to a wedding or something, do you think people would be like, oh, Patrice? I do think it's also partly that Wayne Rooney's performances haven't been great recently.
Yeah,
so
I
to see him having such a good time is also a little bit frustrating because it's like, well, mate, things seem to be going downhill for you, but like you don't seem to be, you know what I mean? And
this is like sort of the first time that you kind of have that feeling that. Is Wayne Rooney turning into Paul Gascoigne in a way? Is that the path he's going down? Like you just mentioned there again, if he was banging in three goals at the weekend and then, you know, scored for England, won the game there, they beat in Spain, then he goes, plays there. Arsenal scores four goals there. Yeah, fair enough. But he's not, and he's not doing that. He's massively under the level of performance that he should be at, given his calibre and so forth. So it's just a bit too much for me. And it seems like Wayne Rooney's going down a pretty dangerous path.
Bit like and a Bamiyang, probably, isn't it? Like, Bamiyang, like last week we mentioned it, we're like, well, boys will be boys. Off he goes. Bamiyang, bloody loves it, doesn't he? I bet you banged them all. And then this week, Wayne comes out and everyone's like, oh, Wayne, you can't be doing that, Wayne.
Pitchforks around.
We have some breaking news, actually.
Come on, yes.
The Sun is reporting an exclusive that Wayne Rooney needs to be stripped of the England captaincy.
Whoa.
Stripped. Off
really?
The back of this.
No.
Incident.
I mean, yeah. I mean, it's not. I genuinely fuck the Sun. The reporting of this has been questionable at best. Their insinuation that Wayne Rooney was pictured with two women, those sort, and I understand that, but it is the way they describe the videos and the pictures and the, you know, the lewdness of it. And then it's the way that they revel in what they feel like they've caused, as if it's some sort of like public service that they've done, that they've revealed this to us. You know, the Sun can reveal, you know, the Sun's exclusive football sources and all this sort of bollocks that they spout. Like, you can't claim to be a reformed paper and then do this sort of thing. This is a hit piece, essentially, and they've made it. They're trying. People haven't protected him in the right way, and if he does lose it, I'm questioning it. I'd vastly question the FA. And then at the same time, I'd say maybe the FA are looking for a reason to do a hit because people, like Dave's already said, you know, people not sure about Wayne's position anyway.
If I can partition the Sun away from this for a second and just focus on the actual issue, I think a lot of people are applying themselves to the situation. So the issue essentially, I don't think, is that he's had a few drinks after a game. It's the fact that at this precise moment, one of the issues people cite with him is he hasn't taken care of himself. And that's why he's in the position that he's in now. So if you look at it from not necessarily a moralistic or a principled standpoint, if you just look at it from an athletic perspective, this is very much why he's in the position he's in. So I don't think actually I don't think the people saying bad things about him are being negative as much as they're disappointed and frustrated at what he could have been, if that makes sense. They're frustrated by the potential that has theoretically been wasted by someone not making smart decisions. And I mean, you look at someone like Ronaldo, who is perhaps the best example I can think of pure dedication and purity, not just in the way that he acts, but in the way that he looks as well. Like, he doesn't have tattoos. There's nothing. He's so focused on football that that's all that has dominated his entire life. And you look at someone like Rooney and you can't apply the same thought process to that. You can't apply the same lifestyle to that. And so I think the fact that he was in an England top, I think in years gone by that probably would have been applauded, if I'm really honest. I think there's a generation who definitely would tell that story now. And so it was great, he was in his England top and he was just like one of the lads and he drank with us until 5 a.m. and he had all these great stories. Whereas now it seems to apply a lot more to the person than the action in that sense.
Hard to disagree with that. I think, you know, you speak to it there, Chris, when Sir Alex Ferguson was sort of pointing out potentially that Rooney doesn't take care of himself, and he compared him in his autobiography to players like Ronaldo, as you have, like Giggs. And he obviously saw this coming a long way off. But still, the FA and Southgate stripping him of the captaincy feels, maybe like you say, Lawrence, maybe it's an excuse. This is the excuse they needed in order to kind of end the Rooney era, almost. Anyway, there you go. Breaking news.
End it. Over.
Done. Next question is from Jack on Twitter. This one's for you, basically, Chris. What is going on with the US men's national team? Are they going to miss out on the World Cup? And is there anyone who doesn't think Klinsmann should be sacked? What do you reckon?
Jonathan Klinsmann probably doesn't, who is his son.
Margaret Klinsmann, his estranged sister.
Of course, of course.
Yeah. Essentially, what's going wrong is you're
Keith Klinsmann. Sorry,
you're looking at a coach that doesn't necessarily have a plan. That's the problem. Is that when he was hired to develop an identity in a lot of ways for the US men's national team, and he hasn't done that. And he said in the past, you know, I'm not here to be liked. That's good because no one really does like him anymore. And you look at his media handling style, and it can be quite blunt. It can be quite lacking in charm, I think. And even I think now it's reached the point where just basic decisions don't necessarily make sense. So a good example is picking Timothy Chandler over DeAndre Yedlin. Even though Yedlin is in fantastic form, I think offers a lot more than Chandler, who has hit his ceiling as a player. It's that kind of thing that frustrates people. It's also, and you can go into very different camps about the people who are now starting to dislike Klinsmann and the people who have done it for years. And in that second camp, there's the notion that Benny Failhaber and Sasha Kljestan have been ostracized from the national team for a long time. Kljestan's only recently come in, but even now he's not starting games. And that is baffling because with him and Michael Bradley, you've got arguably the three best central midfielders in, I would say, the American pool of players. And yet they can't get on the pitch together. And the belief with Failhaber is, or the story goes, that he had an argument with a teammate in a camp and then was ostracized permanently off the back of that. And I've spoken to him about that, and he's never had a concrete answer as to why he's not included. He's been told to improve things, and he believes has improved them, but has now accepted that he's not going to play for the national team as long as Klinsmann's there. And that's really sad, because he's a wonderful player, Benny Failhaber. He could, and I think should, have had a better career in Europe, personally. And It's those kind of things, along with the fact that just in general, they look a very disjointed team. Against Mexico, they played a formation, a 3-5-2, that they'd only played for 45 minutes previously in 5 years. He then goes to Costa Rica, and yes, the pitch is not great. Costa Rica is a very difficult place to go in terms of hex qualifying. I'm a big fan of Costa Rica as a team anyway. They are a very good team. You don't really get shut down 4-0 like that, though. That's the problem, is that it's not the fact that they lost, it's the way in which they lost. That's why people are starting to now think, actually, this guy has to go if we're going to move forward, because he's not only not progressing us, he's arguably taking us backwards a little bit.
Yeah. Also, Debbie Chin, Jonathan Klinsmann, Martha Klinsmann, Siegfried Klinsmann, Layla
Have
Klinsmann.
Have you been looking up the Klinsmann family tree while Chris and, gave this brilliant
And,
answer.
Of course, his brother, Horst Klinsmann.
Of course. Of course.
The other thing as well, just one sidebar, is you also look at the way that Jonathan, his son, reacted to Landon Donovan being left out of the World Cup squad, which was to tweet something out that, and I'm paraphrasing it slightly, it was, ha ha ha, I only learned of Donovan's omission when I checked my phone. That's quite disrespectful to someone that did a lot for US soccer. And I think as much as we credit Julian Green for scoring in that World Cup, there is still those, and it was true at the time as well, who were really disappointed that Landon Donovan didn't get that send-off with the national team, that last World Cup that he deserved. Because I think he put a lot of himself into US soccer period, not just Major League Soccer, but the national team as well. And the fact that it ended in the way that it did, fairly meekly, that's not tending to a legacy. And I think there's part of Klinsmann that should have been doing that.
I do also think, though, that the flip side of that, and I do think I agree with what you're saying, Chris, I do also think there are some revisionists in US soccer about the way that Landon Donovan acted at some points in his career and was perceived. And there were times where I remember people on EPL Talk and World Soccer Talk vehemently against the way that Landon Donovan was treating the people around him and has treated some of the people around him. And as much as, you know, we look back sometimes and remember him very fondly, I do remember there being political points about keeping him out of the side. And I get your point about disrespect, and I get your point about, you know, having someone who's valued in the team. But at the same time, I also think some people would have put the boot in with Klinsmann just to counter that, you know, if he'd have kept him in, they would have accused him of being, you know, sentimental or bowing to people too early and not keeping his eyes on the prize. Do you know what I mean?
Definitely. And I think, like I say, to go back to that media handling style for a second, I'm very careful about how I phrase this. I think sometimes in American sports culture, when you ask a question, you accept the answer that is given and no further is taken with it. And I've seen that manifest sometimes with Klinsmann, like, for example, with Fail Harbour. A friend of mine actually asked Klinsmann, you know, why isn't he in the team? And Klinsmann's response was, well, he's just behind people on the depth chart. It's like, well, that's fairly obvious, but why is he behind? It's so unfair sometimes to scapegoat players. The obvious one to look at during that period was Mix Diskerud, who was not registering many assists, not scoring many goals, not playing well for NYCFC, but was ahead of Fail Harbour, who was playing out of his skin at the time in the league. And it's things like that, the fact that maybe there wasn't enough follow-up, and sometimes the American press is cordial enough that they don't seek further clarification. They're quite happy to take the answer that's given. That can sometimes be a detriment of him, because I think in instances like that, he's had a little bit of an easy ride. But now it's really quite sharply turning against him.
Yeah, agreed.
Next question from the main man, Luke Dore. He says, what should Gerrard do? Go to MK Dons, keep playing, or go back to LFC to coach? This is obviously based on the news, if you haven't heard it, the surprising news that Steven Gerrard and MK Dons have been in contact over the vacant manager's role. Dave, what do you make of all this?
It's quite an interesting one, that. You know, Steven Gerrard has always mentioned, I think he wants to go into coaching after his playing career, and why not? You know, MK Dons could be a good club for him. You know, in a decent level, you know, sort of like we mentioned Ryan Giggs a while ago and how he was not potentially taking clubs in the Championship because he thought it was beneath him. I think, you know, going to MK Dons could be a good move for Gerrard to start. But again, it would be chucking him in right at the deep end. So if he doesn't get it right straight away, things could completely go the wrong way in a way, and he potentially could lose confidence in himself and move on to something else. But maybe go back to Liverpool could be a good thing. Imagine sort of Klopp and then Gerrard there as maybe an assistant, or a, you know, working in the back with the younger lads could be a really good thing just to start his coaching career. And then as he gets experience, then take that job in League One.
Yeah, I mean, I don't quite get. I mean, I understand that he's a good option, but I mean, he's not coached at any sort of serious level before. I understand the players are probably going to have a lot of respect for him, but it would also make sense that maybe it's a good idea to go back and observe Klopp. I mean, he's considered to be a great motivator. Gerrard wasn't at the club while he was there. You know, he'd be greatly welcomed. Maybe Gerrard is aware of what his legacy will be at Liverpool, and maybe going back too soon, or sort of, you know, allowing them a bit of breathing space is something that they might prefer.
On Gerrard, staying on Gerrard, Chris, we got a question here coming on Twitter from Aaron saying, were Lampard and Gerrard a success in MLS? Obviously not necessarily a simple question, but it looks like their time is coming to an end at NYCFC and LA Galaxy respectively. I mean, what have you made of their spell in America?
Well, I actually wrote something for Yahoo today about their respective legacies. So the timing of that question is brilliant. I think what you can say is that for Lampard, the bar was slightly lower because NYCFC are a new team, and Gerrard was essentially joining the most successful club in MLS. So for him, success or achievement was really only going to find itself in winning MLS Cup, which is a big ask at any point. They both made the playoffs this season. Gerrard made the playoffs last season. I think Lampard had a terrible first season, and it looked like it was going the same way this season, to be truthful. But then he managed to get himself on the field, score goals, essentially played as like a second striker of sorts, and was really clinical, and had a little bit of fortune with some of his goals, and left the team in a fairly good position. They had qualified for the playoffs. Yes, they were annihilated by Toronto, granted. But still, there was achievement there. And you kind of can compare them to Orlando, because they came into the league at the same time, and say that NYCFC are a fair few streets ahead of Orlando in that sense, because they've made the playoffs, because they've got that monkey off their back. Gerrard, I think, was a well-intentioned move, but not one he was prepared for. I think the travel, the humidity, the pitches, he's talked about this himself and said that it is physically draining, and I think there was a real naivety to him approaching it. So if I was to rate one above the other, I'd say Lampard had the better time in it. And honestly, for Gerrard, the pair of them suffered injuries, but in general, I didn't feel a huge seismic impact from Gerrard. I felt like he had moments, but they were very fleeting.
Luke also asks, when will you guys have a fan meetup, potentially at a pub, to watch a game and converse? Winky face. We did talk about doing a meetup in the summer. Never quite happened. Still got lost in the shuffle.
In the tournaments.
Yeah, I mean, maybe early next year if people are interested. I'm always dubious about how many people would actually. It would just be me, Dave, and it'd be us four, wouldn't it? Having a pint.
Biggest fans of ourselves.
Just like a regular Saturday. We'll put a little poll out on Twitter. We'll try and, you know, gauge the demand. Really for that.
Would you come to a meetup? Yes. I mean, no. 1,000 people said no.
Yes. They definitely would. Shit. The trolls would say no. Another question here from Callum Crystal Talents on Twitter said, do you guys think it's too early to talk about the title race in November? What do you make of that one, Lawrence? I mean, you know, we're basing
the league is shaping up.
Exactly.
You know, I mean, 10 games in, most people say the league is beginning to take some sort of shape because you're a quarter of the way through the season. You can look at who's strong. You've got at least a reasonable read of the number of games. But I think also it's probably a good idea to say now is also a great time to sort of start your metric, because they get a solid number of games between now and then maybe 20 games. So, you know, I think now is a really good time to start looking at the way that teams are shaping up. It's post-international break. A lot of managers will have had some time to think about, you know, how they want to take it, where they want to take it. And I'll be, you know, the people I'm interested in seeing when they come back are like United, Saturday, 12:30. It's going to be really interesting to see how they dealt with this international break.
That is going to be an interesting one. I mean, Dave, how are you feeling about that? Man United, Arsenal?
Relatively good. You know, Mourinho's record against Arsene Wenger is unbelievable. 13 games played. Mourinho's won 7 of the games, 6 draws, and Arsene Wenger's failed to pick up a win. So I'm quite comfortable at the moment because I think Mourinho will take the pressure off the players by it being a, by him drawing it to being a battle of the two managers. Arsenal as well, I've got a little bit of a problem at right back. Obviously, Bellerin, who's been absolutely fantastic, probably the best right back over the last two seasons in the Premier League, you know, and he's out injured now. So Carl Jenkinson's coming in, who is has been good when, you know, when he plays for a team that's doing well, like when that West Ham team was in real good form, he was performing very well. But then when they were getting tested towards the end of the season, he was quite poor. So I want to see Anthony Martial. I want to see Marcus Rashford drift to that left-hand side and really sort of go at Jenkinson and Mustafi as well, who will be playing together for the first time. Again, their communication, is it there at the start? You know, first 5 minutes, United need to absolutely hound Arsenal's right sort of back zone in a way. So yeah, I'm reasonably comfortable at the moment. Paul Pogba had a very, very good game for France midweek, got a goal, played an absolutely fantastic pass with the outside of his boot. If you've not seen it, go and check it out. It's absolutely wonderful. So, you know, it just shows his technique and his talent. So yeah, I think I'm quite comfortable. Again, Pogba's not performed in these bigger games yet. You know, Chelsea and Man City, he's not done too well, so I expect him to explode as well. I'm fine.
It is a big weekend as well as Arsenal and United. Miko writes in saying, what are your thoughts on this weekend's games? We've got the Milan derby, of course, the Clásica, the Madrid derby coming up as well. I mean, which is the pick of the bunch for you, Lawrence? Which one would you be tuning in for?
I think the Madrid derby is definitely the pick, isn't it? Massive game there, especially looking at the way that that's going to shape the table. Because I think especially in La Liga at the moment, you know, it's so squashed at the top of the table. I know that Atletico aren't able to reach Real Madrid. They're not even able to reach Barcelona. So the best they can make is third this weekend. But it would also mean that if Real Madrid lost to Atletico, it would give Barcelona ground to make up. So, you know, and they're playing Malaga at home. So, you know, I think on basically Barcelona could be top of the league by the time that Real Madrid play away to Atletico Madrid.
So there's going to be
real pressure on Real Madrid to keep up there. Because the worst thing that Real Madrid are going to want to do is come off the back of an international break like that. And at the same time, it would be great for Atletico to make up the space. I'm also looking forward to looking in Serie A, obviously, with AC and Inter. I think Inter and AC are both looking forward, probably already, to next season. I know that they both had great runs. And you know, AC are only 5 points off the top, but Inter are on 17 points down in ninth place in the table. So, you know, I think the best that they can probably achieve is Champions League football next season.
This AC Milan team is quite interesting. You know, it is Montella who has brought that, you know, lovely style of football that he brings as a manager. But they've got a very good Italian core in a way with, you know, players like Locatelli, 18 years old, Donnarumma, 17 years old. The future's really bright for Milan, actually. I think they've finally gone over that phase of recovering after they kept Gattuso alive for so long, and they finally, like, there's some stars popping out there. You know, you mentioned someone like Bonaventura, someone that's not really regarded as a superstar, but is a very good functional player that can play a number of roles in your midfield and will always give you a 7 out of 10. And then you've got Carlos Bacca at front. So I think Milan have got a very good side. But then Inter, obviously Stefan Pioli coming in from Lazio. Is he the right man for the job? Nobody knows. No one can manage this Inter Milan team at the moment because it's such a weird combination of players. So it's going to be an interesting one, but I do think AC will win. You know, other interesting derbies, Fenerbahce playing Galatasaray as well over in Turkey on Sunday at 5 o'clock. So if you're interested in that, go and, you know, jump over there. But they've not done so well this season, both, you know, in third and fifth position in the league, respectively. So it'll also be a battle for second position, I think, between those two.
There's a great game in the Championship this weekend between Newcastle and Leeds United. I think that's a fantastic game.
It is, yeah. I think it's the first time that Leeds have sold out in a few years as well. At least that's what I can remember reading. And in many respects, you could look at the sadness that this is occurring in the second tier and not the top flight, because many years ago it was quite a big game. But you know, it conjures up a lot of good memories. There was a 4-3 there a few years ago with Sir Bobby Robson that was quite iconic for Newcastle fans. But yeah, it'll be nice. I think it'll hopefully be a display of passion in all the right avenues.
Yeah, there's a lot of fans there who think they probably should be a little bit higher up. It'd be like, I would love to see Leeds promoted back up to the Premier League.
Mm. Big weekend. Another interesting European football question here from the wonderfully named Carlos Spicy Wiener. on Twitter, at Jones96Jack. He says, with only five unbeaten teams remaining in Europe's top five leagues, Bayern, Real, Hoffenheim, Leipzig, and of course Spurs, who's going to basically keep that run going the longest?
Well, Adam, I think that question was answered on, was it the vlog, Lawrence? So maybe we...
Check out the vlog.
That will go up at the same time as, well, roughly at the same time as this.
Yes, Carlo Spicy Wiener, check out the vlog. It's my recommendation for you. Next question. Interesting question here from Callum McLeod. He says, as a current first-year English student in journalism, I'm wondering how hard it was to break into football journalism specifically. Chris, I mean, this one's for you.
It's not easy. It's not always rewarding. The pay isn't always great.
Where do I sign?
Wait, Callum, wait. It's going to come back.
But if you commit to it, you'll get there. There's a lot of things that aren't pretty, and there are enough people who will tell you not to do this. So I don't want to be that person. I want to tell you essentially that if it's something that really does stick with you and it's something you want to do, then go for it, because I guarantee there are people with less talent that have made it than you have. So use that as more motivation. Like I say, a lot of it, excuse me, I think in the current climate, I think freelancing is increasingly a way to go, assuming you can't find the work. Because, for example, the position I was in, and it's different for everybody. The position I was in was there wasn't a huge wealth of jobs in the Northeast to begin with. So I had to think further out. And honestly, I'm going to choose my words carefully here. Even now, when there are opportunities in the Northeast, I don't find that they're better than things I could be doing elsewhere. And that was a decision I was presented with fairly recently, was a choice of whether I wanted to take a job here in the Northeast or keep doing what I was doing. And I think for that reason, freelancing is great, because while it doesn't necessarily provide you the greatest security, and there are definitely nights where you get less sleep because of it, it also can take you to so many different places and opportunities. If, firstly, you've got the work rate, and secondly, you've got the ingenuity.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
With LinkedIn Jobs, we tap into a network of more than a billion professionals to help you find quality professionals quickly and easily for any role you need. Marketing wizards? Found them.
Software engineers?
Found.
That project manager I could never seem to hire?
And found. LinkedIn Jobs quickly matches your roles with candidates with the right skills and experience. In fact, 86% of small businesses get a qualified candidate within 24 hours. Post your first job for free and get started at linkedin.com/spoken. That's linkedin.com/spoken. Terms and conditions apply.
To engineer contacts and network. That's the thing I think that enough people aren't willing to do, is pick up a phone, send an email, and just engage with people and be upfront with what you're trying to get out of it. I think there are a lot of instances where people try to dance around what they want in the hope that they'll be offered it, when if you just go for it with an honesty and an integrity to it, I think you'll get that.
Another great answer. Here's a question from Jack. Bring back N'Golo is his Twitter handle, and tellingly, because his question is there anybody in the world to replace Kante? Dave, I mean, Leicester tried somewhat to plug the hole Kante left, but hasn't quite worked.
It's a pretty big hole, though, isn't it? You know, covers about 17 positions on the pitch on his own. But it's difficult, because Kante, again, is playing some of the best football in his career at Chelsea, you know, put back into that, you know, the similar role that he was playing. Potential players that we've got, obviously, Idrissi Gueye, and someone that we've championed on the podcast before. Just looking at basic numbers at the moment in terms of tackle stats, Benjamin Andre from Rennes, 39 tackles, one in the in Liga this season. You know, he's ranked second in Europe's top five leagues. Potentially, he could be the man. He looks like he's got similar stats in terms of, you know, how he wins the ball back and so forth. But I think Kante was just, is so good at that, that he has that both ability to intercept and win tackles. That's quite rare, because that's kind of a bit of a different skill. One is being very aggressive and, you know, timing yourself very well in challenges. The other one is sitting back and reading the play. So it's a difficult skill to have both of those. And that's why Kante's, you know, such a quality player.
Sound like he fell off his chair. A good question here. I assume it's because I'm a Celebrity Get Me Out of Here is on, unless it's...
It got cancelled.
What did?
I'm a Celebrity.
No, why?
I mean, that's what most people said, but except I said, no. Why?
Did it actually... Have they stopped it?
Yeah, I think that was what I read the other day in the Daily Mirror.
That shows how up-to-date I am on pop culture.
They've stopped filming it, or they're stopping making it after this one?
I think they just didn't go, I'm a Celebrity... Star reveals she was dumb. Oh, maybe it wasn't.
She had a chronic bout of realization.
They didn't make it. Yeah, it's not going ahead. Thank God.
I saw someone do it the other day. It was on TV last the other night, wasn't it?
Apparently, it's been
hard day's work. Adam likes nothing more than seeing a former Britain's Got Talent contestant try to eat a kangaroo's penis.
No, I saw it. It was less interesting than that. It was someone...
A donkey's penis.
No, on a building, balancing on their the edge of a penis? Building or something, like walking out on a plank. It was
bizarre. Your penis?
That'd be quite something. The question is, if you could send one football-related person into the jungle... Not necessarily an armed celebrity, just generally into a jungle.
Oh,
who would it be?
Oh, you see, there's a difference between sending them into the jungle and I've got a few of these.
I mean, this guy. I mean, Bean Roberts. He may have never seen I'm a Celebrity. Just thinking, you know what? Who do you want to send into the jungle?
Well, given Wayne Bridges, there, I was going to suggest John Terry, so we could flood the votes.
Oh, yes.
My God, that really would be incredible.
That would be.
But then at the same time, I don't know if this is how celebrity works because I haven't seen it in years. But then also vote for Wayne Bridge to get as many treats as possible. Just so that essentially you can reinforce the message to both men that this is what the country thinks of you.
Could you also then, though, would it also be interesting to see how many of the treats John Terry fucked?
Oh, yeah, it definitely was. If you found out it was Wayne Bridges, then he's going straight in. Then afterwards, you could send in Anton Ferdinand, you know, Rio Ferdinand. It could get interesting. Who would you send in, Dave, if you could send anyone into the jungle?
Right now, I think Wayne Rooney could do a stint in the jungle. But not the jungle, celebrity jungle. This is a rehab jungle. Just have a word with yourself. Think about his life. Come back a stronger.
Gorillas as nurses.
There's no such thing as the rehab jungle, Dave.
Don't crush his dreams, Lawrence. There could be a rehab jungle out there. Just in the jungle, could be.
I suppose you do find some of the most potent medicines in the jungle. I suppose you could.
Exactly. So we'll get Wayne to do some magic mushrooms and see the future.
Wow.
Yeah,
Dave, here's another one from you, from Jeff. It's Mamido on Twitter. Do United need a new
hold
left
on, where's
back?
My say? I had loads of great ones.
Come on, hit me.
Oh, fuck off. You're not having them anymore. Yeah. You're not having the likes of Nigel Pearson, example of how he bat the Wolves away in the jungle. Or Sam Allardyce, how he'd still do all his bloody speeches out in the middle of nowhere. Huh? Jurgen Klopp, because he actually does enjoy taking his teams out to places like the jungle or the forest and bonding them together. Yeah, I get the points. None of you do. I've got the Football Ramble points.
I wish we could have heard you explain those, Lawrence, but we can't. Next question is from Jeff Mamido. Do United need a left back, or is it just clickbait, Dave?
I think Lawrence has got something to say about Luke Shaw.
He's gone. He's had enough.
He's stormed out of it. He's done.
Not
me, no, I think Luke Shaw needs the rest of the season, and if he doesn't potentially get up to level, maybe get him some competition. I don't think he needs a replacement, but competition is always good in squads. You know, it brings the best out of players. So if he doesn't pull his finger out, then maybe in the summer get another one just to sort of compete for that starting spot, and maybe Luke Shaw push on a little bit because he's not been great this year. Let's all be honest with ourselves. You know, he's not at the level of performance that he should be at. You know, the early stage of his career, that the expectation on him is big. But you know, the talent he had at Southampton, the football he's playing at Southampton. He hasn't quite got to that level yet at Manchester United, and that's all United fans want, is that Luke Shaw, not the Luke Shaw we've seen.
It's all they want.
Can I reply to a point that we made earlier in the week? I sort of made a point earlier in the week, which has been made.
Lawrence is gone.
TFR. Basically, I said I thought that essentially Mourinho had sort of, his image had slipped somewhat, his persona was damaged, and because of that, he sort of changed the way that he looks a little bit. And you know, he used to be this very sharply suited guy, and would sort of, everyone would look up to him, you know, in a very sort of you know, older brother kind of way, like a lot of people respected him. I think now that veil has somewhat changed, or at least his persona has changed. You know, that's different now. And someone tweeted me and said, no, he's still exactly the same. I'd be interested to know what you think, Dave, because I don't think he looks the same. And I people see it as a criticism or as a disrespect of United that, you know, somehow I'm trying to, you know, I don't know, piss off United fans to show they're not of the same status or something like that, which is not, just not true. But at the same time, I think it is true to say that, you know, he's a different character now. He's a different person. He's a different persona. And I read a really interesting article on In Bed with Maradona about how he became the anti-hero in Italy, and it was really fascinating to read about you know, the plight of the anti-hero, the plight of Mourinho, and maybe how that's changed, and maybe how we don't perceive it in the same way, or maybe our expectations of Mourinho no longer fit with what his expectations are. It's really interesting.
I think it's a good point. Now, I think that is kind of where, you know, it has, how he has been painted. And it might be down to some United fans who have been hypercritical of Mourinho so far. He's not playing attacking football, blah, 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 blah. It's the same as last year, when it's completely not. And maybe it's time to support the anti-hero again. Ferguson was another anti-hero. Ferguson was hated by every single other fan in the Premier League or around the world. He was absolutely hated because of the success he got. And sometimes he could be a right, you know, one of those to the press, to the media, to so forth. And Mourinho is exactly the same. And I think that sort of hatred and wanting to be hated for some United fans needs to come back, and we need to be the guys that are the bad guys, because that's what we are painted. We have a devil on our crest, and that is, you know, unfortunately, how Man United is. That's the club it is, and I think some fans need to remember what United is. Obviously, there's been Louis van Gaal, there's been David Moyes, but our image is the bad guys.
Interesting. I don't know. I mean, that's not always been the case.
Yeah, I find that interesting. I've heard that so much since Mourinho came in, and it's an interesting point you raise, but I don't know. It just seems... it seems tangential to the fact that, to being good, essentially, to be in the chat, you don't need to be hated to be the champions.
But that's always been United, hated, ignored.
No, it hasn't, Dave.
But that's like a byproduct of being the champions, as opposed to what makes you successful, what makes you champions. It's a byproduct of being so successful. Everyone hates Man United because they were the most successful, so dominant for so many years. Everyone started hating Chelsea, as you know, for other reasons as well. But because of success, it's not, you don't need to be hated to be successful, I feel like.
But I think that's always going to be the United. I don't think the United way is going to be loved.
Dave, because of the Busby Babes.
Yeah, but that's what I mean. So that's what I was going to say. So yeah, the Busby Babes was everyone. No, that everyone loved the Busby Babes. You know, it was an English team and young players. You know, the whole of England went to a standstill when that plane went down. You know, people crying in the streets and so forth. You know, that's what my dad was born the day that the Munich air disaster happened. And you know, my grandparents and my late granddad always said, you know, this is what everyone loved in the whole country. And they were living in Somerset, and they were like, you know, everyone was upset there. But I think that was the United that was loved. You know, then the success of Liverpool came, the Liverpool were most hated. But in recent years, in the last 20 years, Man United have been hated. And that's kind of the game now. That's what it is. I don't think that's ever going to change.
No, it isn't. Why? Because, you know what, Dave? You guys could have been, in United, essentially, could have been very, very loved by a lot of people. And actually, I've grown to have quite an affection towards them because of channels like Full Time Devils. I quite like people like Adam McCullough. I think, you know, I have a certain affection for Stephen Howson, which is a very select affection, but still, it's an affection. And I think, you know, I think he's a very humanizing guy. I think there's a lot of United fans out there. There's a lot of United fans out there, and you know, I went to the club and I thought, you know what, they'll probably be the bad guys. I won't like them. They've got some of the nicest staff, some of the nicest people, and it's a lovely family club. And it upsets me a little bit. I mean, not to the point where I'm crying or anything, but it's sort of an upsetting thought that United fans sort of are so swept away with the idea of Mourinho's success that they feel like they have to. For me, what you just said there, Dave, to some extent, and it might sound a little bit dramatic, but it sounds a bit like it's selling out to me.
What do you mean selling out?
I don't think selling out your United values.
My whole lifetime, United has been hated. I've sat and been jeered by, you know, going away with United, have been jeered by home fans of everybody. I've seen West Ham do the Munich play, the biggest insult to Manchester United. Yeah, one that's absolutely totally disrespectful to the whole club. But why are they doing it?
Listen,
you're not hated in the same way as, and I think in many ways it was a respectful. The West Ham one's a bad example, and there are Liverpool fans who have obviously sung abhorrent things about the Munich disaster, and those guys don't get it. They don't get the respect that two big clubs have for each other between Liverpool and Manchester. But my point would be, I've always had a respect for Manchester United. There are times where I struggle with that, you know, when you see Gary Neville going down the pitch and kissing his badge, or Rio Ferdinand really loving it, but at the same time you get that.
Pounds he ever spent.
But the point is, Dave, that I think at the same time, you know, there was always a respect for what Ferguson did and what United did, and at the moment, if I'm completely honest, there doesn't seem to be a respect for United. At least people respected Ferguson's United. And I know they're going to be United fans who get angry about this, but I'm trying to speak from a perspective of someone who wants to see United come to a point where you know, there'll be a feared foe and there'll be a respected foe. As I miss looking forward to the United games.
This is the thing. I'd like that it's going to come back to a stage where United are going to get to that level again, unfortunately, because, you know, they are one of the richest clubs in the world, and unfortunately money talks in football now. Whether it does take 2 years, does take 3 years, there's going to be a stage where we'll listen back to this conversation, you'll be like, I absolutely fucking hate United now.
But you know, I think
you'll be losing your shit. We'll steal Pochettino. We'll steal Harry Kane, and we'll rob Eric Dyer. And you'll be like, "Oh my god!"
My point is, Dave, that
you'll never get Eric Dyer as long as you've got Herrera in that side.
They'll have a fall now.
Fired up for the game because they're walking behind each other like, "I hate you."
Dave,
you
hate me. My point would be that, you know, you're talking about Man United need to be hated, and a lot of United fans started talking about that. But it seems that that's come in since Mourinho came in. I wasn't hearing that when Moyes was there. I wasn't hearing that when Van Gaal came in. There's a difference between being feared and being hated. And it feels like Man United fans are trying to almost sometimes excuse some of Mourinho's more interesting behaviour by saying, yeah, we need to be hated. That's what he needs to do.
Yeah. It's kind of, again, it is the same thing. Like, obviously, it changed under David Moyes and it changed under Louis Van Gaal. You know, David Moyes did a terrible thing of getting rid of too many leaders from that United team. You know, he got rid of Vidic, Ferdinand and Patrice Evra in the same summer. That is crazy talk. And, you know, you do that, you take a massive chunk of what United was under Ferguson out of the club with Alex Ferguson going. And that's the difference. And then you get David Moyes in, who's, you know, whatever David Moyes was as Man United manager. I don't really know what he tried. I don't know what he tried to achieve at Manchester United. At least Louis van Gaal knew what he was doing. But again, the fear factor had gone. The biggest thing you should do as a Man United boss for me is win all your games at home. And that was something that David Moyes failed and something that Louis van Gaal failed. Something that Mourinho's doing reasonably well.
Making Old Trafford a difficult place to go to.
Making Old Trafford a difficult place. So that's it. That's all the fans want at home. At home.
And then you get
back. No, it isn't. It's not. It can't be all the United fans want.
No, I know what Dave means, though, in terms of...
It's a building
of, you know,
block. It's a building block to go where you want to go. It's winning up your home games and getting support for your team at home. I think that's, you know,
but it used to be such a difficult place to go to Old Trafford, you'd never win. But now it kind of seems, oh, you know, maybe we can get a draw, maybe even, you know, get all 3 points here. It doesn't seem to be, a place that teams are scared to go to. But I worry of talking about Manchester United too much. You know, we do talk about them and Mourinho so much. But let me transition on to...
talk about them too much, Adam.
Excellent, nice. Let me transition on to Liverpool. Lawrence, I mean, we did... discuss it a few weeks ago about Coutinho potentially leaving Liverpool. Tim Eales simply says, can Liverpool keep hold of Coutinho? # I am the whole nice. We heard Klopp say a few days ago in his press conference that, you know, he wants to make Liverpool a club where players don't think about leaving, the likes of Suarez, etc. He's not worried. Are you worried?
I mean, I would always be worried when the overtures sort of come. The Liverpool Echo seems to be reporting all the time, trying to make people a little bit paranoid about the fact that, you know, Iniesta's had his say and all the big boys have had their say at Barcelona. That, you know, they are good friends, Neymar and Coutinho. And I think, the one positive for Liverpool is that they were the ones who unearthed this diamond, if you like. Or polished the diamond. Other people knew he was good, but they never really knew how to get the best out of him. And I think that Liverpool are, for a while, going to have to accept what their status is, that people will question whether he will stay. It doesn't mean he's guaranteed to leave. I think most people report with a sense of inevitability about it. And I think that's maybe what I find difficult about it, because it almost seems a bit I often find transfer rumors a little bit disrespectful. You know, it's disrespectful to say until you heard it from the horse's mouth, if you like. And I guess for that point, I guess I would hope, as a Liverpool fan, and having heard what Kristen said about the man and, you know, what the man values, I would hope that he would stick around a little bit longer, considering what he's made Liverpool and what Liverpool have made him.
Mm. Another.
Having said that, he'll leave in the summer.
Here we go. Yeah, he'll be gone. It's an interesting question from esteemed company, Stephen from Blue Moon Rising TV. He says, how many brain cells does a person need to lose to form the opinion Pep is a fraud? Now,
5.
There's 100 billion cells in your brain, Lawrence. You only need to lose 5? So you're essentially saying that's a legitimate opinion to have?
No, I mean, you know, the loss of brain cells does not legitimize an opinion, Adam. Well, I mean, I don't think that's ever.
That's what I inferred.
I don't think it's ever been a common. I mean, you are preeminent in inferation, but I don't think it's ever been a commonly held opinion. You know, I don't think that many people realistically think that, do they?
No, of course not,
Dave.
And if they do, they've got a few billion brain cells missing.
Yeah, I think it's just to stick to beating with him, right? It's just like, oh, he's a fraud. You know, he had Lionel Messi. He had this, he had that. Yeah, he completely changed that Barcelona team. I think we spoke about this many a time, how he went from a Barcelona team of Ronaldinho going out on the lash every single day and then turning up to Barcelona training and pretending he was injured or going to sleep in the medic's tent, to the team that conquered Europe time and time again. So for me, Pep Guardiola will be the best coach in the world at the moment, to be quite honest, in terms of what he does with players and how he improves them.
Boom. I still love that story. Of my favourite Pep Guardiola Barcelona story is the one where he tried to ban, I've said it so many times, the one where he tried to ban the fizzy drinks. No Pepsi, no Coke. Lionel Messi sitting in the change room, walks out, goes to the vending machine, gets a Pepsi, walks straight back into the change room, opens it up, gulps it down. I'm the boss, mate, essentially.
And smiles to the camera.
Yeah. It's a power move. It's a power play.
It's the best advert they ever did.
Lawrence, this...
Do you really believe that to be true?
Yeah, I reckon. I genuinely do. I mean, I think Messi knows how important he is to that club. He knows how essential he is to Barcelona. He knows essentially he can do whatever he wants. And I have no doubt that maybe on a couple of occasions he's asserted that dominance. You know,
Messi did just stand in front of the entire Argentine press corps and say, look, we're not going to speak to you anymore.
He knows he can do what he wants.
I think, I'm not saying he's a bad person or he's arrogant or anything.
No, no.
I think he's a little bit self-aware of who he is and the power that he holds. Because like I say, the reason that they stopped speaking to the press, just for added context, is there was a story claiming that Lavezzi had been caught smoking marijuana and was dropped because of it. And Messi essentially led all the players out into the press room and took the microphone and said, look, we're not going to speak to you because we can't be dealing with these stories that are fabricated. It's ridiculous. You can say whatever you like now, but we're not going to talk to you.
I think that's, I'm quite honest, I think that's fair enough. If your press, if your press are making up lies, I think the England players should do the same. I think the press does go too far. And if it does make up stories, I think that people are well within their rights to choose who they talk to. And the press should suffer if they don't hold people properly to account. And if they
don't think
do
it was universally reported, though. There will have been people caught in the crossfire there.
I understand that, but I also think...
My point is not whether he was right or wrong to do it. The point was that he is self-aware enough to know that he has the power to stand in front of them and say that, and knows that either what they say will not be negative off the back of it, or that opinion will not translate to support. Yeah. I mean, he retired in the summer, for goodness sake.
And I'm retired.
You know what I mean? I think he is. I think he's someone who just ignores his position.
Here is, it's a question for you, Lawrence, essentially. Akshay Huda on Twitter said, which EPL team is the equivalent of hashtag Dub Nation? I believe that's the Golden State Warriors.
Sure, yeah, okay.
Yes. Or hashtag defend the land, which I'm going to say is the Cleveland Cavaliers.
The Cleveland Cavaliers.
What? Yeah. Quick question. Why are the Golden State Warriors called the Dubs?
So there's a, obviously everyone's got their NBA names. Sort of,
I heard that word, which sounds weird, is because it's Warriors, W, dub, dub. Just seems a bit
so weird. There's Dub Nation. There's also, I'm trying to think of all the other ones now.
So he's saying which EPL team is the equivalent of Golden State Warriors. Like, for those who don't watch the NBA, who only, you know the basics, what are the Golden State Warriors to the NBA? Are they like the best team? Are they this? Are they that?
I mean, they were the best team. They obviously didn't win it last year because of the Cavs beat them and had a great comeback. So you'd say that at the moment, the prominent
they're
narrative...
They're Rodgers Liverpool, aren't they? But it didn't result in them winning the title.
To be fair, I mean, I'd imagine they're more... that they'd probably be Klopp's Liverpool. But I mean, because the point is, they have won a championship, though. That's the difference between Rodgers, Liverpool, or Liverpool, and the Golden State Warriors. So I mean, I was looking for someone who's actually won it recently. Essentially, in the Premier League, it's sort of hard to think of anyone like that. You could say. I mean, they're not really like Arsenal. The nearest thing to them is probably like Klopp's side. They've got a couple of, young, promising players in there, not least Stephen Curry. You know, there's Thompson. They've just signed Kevin Durant. But they've sort of got the pull now, which to some extent Liverpool don't really have. So there's not really an equivalent for me of the Golden State Warriors. Cleveland Cavaliers? Probably
the
Paul Pogba.
Clavs. Yeah,
the old cover because probably Paul Pogba and Manchester United because Paul Pogba is the returning guy,
the king,
back to where he'd left. The king returns, that sort of thing. Outside of that, I'd say there aren't that many sort of parallel narratives.
Yeah,
because actually the NBA and football have quite distinct. The NBA are very good at constructing distinctive stories. Mm. I think that's part of it. I'd love to see more distinctive narratives in the Premier League and people breaking out of that.
Dave, this could be one for you. Alexis Golitsyn said, why do stats often refer to the top five leagues? Why not six or seven? Is there really a big gap in quality between these leagues?
I think it's just the readiness of the data when it started to be trendy. I think that was the first few leagues that were really taken notice of. You look at Liga is probably the bottom of that, but then I think if you compared Liga to the Portuguese league, I think Liga would beat it if you had like a playoff between the two leagues. So that's why it's still that way. Obviously the coefficient is a little bit different, but the Portuguese teams, if you look at the top teams there, you got Sporting, Porto, Benfica. You'd say you go over to France, you probably got PSG will be there. Then there's quite a few competitive teams in there. You look at Lyon, Monaco. So I'd still regard that as a better league in terms of standard throughout the league. So that's why I refer to them. But I don't think there's not a problem. It was just because of the data was available for those leagues first. The Portuguese league has only started collecting Opta data this season. So that's one of the reasons why the French league is used. It's just because of it was there first in a way. The Eredivisie, you'd class that a little bit lower down than those top five, I'd say. I'd say that the Eredivisie is behind France by some way. So, yeah, it's an interesting one. But, yeah, I think it is just because the data was there.
Nice. Here is a good question from Alex Emery, Soccer AM YouTube producer extraordinaire Alex Emery.
Wow.
He says, who do you think will get promoted from the championship? Hashtag I am the whole. Thank you, Alex. Chris, I mean, one of those teams, surely, even at this stage of the season, is going to be Newcastle, right?
You would think so, based off how they've been so far. They've been really good. Their defensive work has been, I would say, fantastic. Their attacking work is making progress, and you would have to think will continue to improve. So it's a good sign. I quite like Brighton as well. I think I think they can improve on last season. I do quite like Knockhart. I don't think he's worth the fees that were being touted, but I do think he's a very good player and was a really smart pickup from Brighton in the first place. And then you're looking at the playoffs and... See, my heart would kind of love Huddersfield to do it because I kind of fell in love with them a bit when I saw them up close. They were just... They're kind of imperfect. They're a bit like Dortmund when Dortmund first had their rise. There's a beauty in the imperfection. You know they're not finished, but you see the potential there and what it could be. Norwich, I think Norwich now might miss out if they don't get rid of Alex Neil. I don't think he's progressive enough for that team. I think he's far too risk averse, and you can't do that when the defence is as poor as Norwich's. So maybe... Trying to think who else could be in there. I think it'll be Newcastle and Brighton will go up automatically.
The main man, Carlos Zaldivar. I think the answer to this is a resounding yes. But he says, if you were a pro player playing for the rival club of the team you support, would you make the switch to the club you support if you had the chance? For example, if Chris was a pro player for Sunderland, would you move to Newcastle if you had the chance, even though you'd most likely be seen as a traitor, but get to play for your boyhood club? Surely the answer to that is yes, because you'd be able to...
callback paradigm, basically.
You'd be able to, like, PR it, wouldn't you? Be like, oh, you know, I've always supported Spurs. I came up through the academy or Arsenal, whatever. You'd be able to excuse it and try and win around the fans, surely.
Yeah. I mean, you'd probably...
City, Liverpool or Leeds, Adam?
If you were playing for Liverpool...
Absolutely not. Once I'm the deal, mate. I'd be a baker instead.
Right. But in this hypothetical situation, Dave, you have signed the deal.
I'd make pizza for a living.
Right,
Adam.
Excellent. Right, you're a pizza chef then.
What does that even mean?
He's a pizza chef, Lawrence. He's had his say.
Oh, okay,
if you were playing for Manchester United...
You just offended a lot of pizza chefs there, I feel like.
Yeah.
I love cooking. I definitely... That's what I mean. Chef.
I mean, you just offended them even more. I mean...
How could I be offensive to pizza chefs? I love cooking, me. Anyway. Yeah.
I love women.
Absolutely. Guys. You'll be sorry when Dave Cooks comes live.
Yeah.
That is the next pillar in the Dave Empire. Rishab Singh, thank you very much for your question, says, will a team ever do a reverse Leicester and finish high in one season and get relegated for the next? If so, which club would you enjoy it happening to? I don't think Leicester are in danger of getting relegated this season. I think... As much as they'd sort of struggled to live up to the high standards of last season. But which team would I, apart from Arsenal, which team would I, you know, you'd love to see happen to Chelsea, wouldn't you?
You kind of did, didn't you?
Well, yeah, it's always, it didn't quite go as far as you would have liked it though, you know. They still finished, was it 7th or 8th last year? Relegation maybe.
Already sort of happened to my favourite team. Leeds United in 2000, 2001, fourth in the Premier League, wanted to get to the Champions League semi-final.
Then
three seasons later. See ya!
Here
just
is.
A reminder, we'll be doing that fan meetup in Leeds.
Yes.
Yeah.
We're not
everyone's
doing it in Leeds.
Welcome.
No pizza chefs are invited.
All the Peter Reid fans out there and Eddie Gray, you know, the two managers that took them down, please come as well.
Here's a good one of Lawrence's favourite type
Arsenal
of questions.
Great, I think Arsenal would be fantastic to watch.
Oh.
Or the meltdown on social media.
Lawrence, your favourite type of question here. It's a versus question comparing two players. United Forever said, who was more dominant in their prime, Xavi or Scholes? Nice question, since it was Scholes' birthday a few days ago. What do you reckon, Lawrence, will come to you first, Xavi or Paul Scholes in their prime? Who would you rather have in your team, essentially?
Oh, good question. Who would I rather have in my team is very different to who I thought was more dominant in their prime.
You know,
now or
I've
then?
Riffed. I've riffed off it.
Yeah, you know what?
It's got to be prime Xavi, as much as everyone loves Paul Scholes. It's got to be prime Xavi, isn't it?
Yeah, for me, it's got to be prime Xavi. I just think he'd... Yeah, sorry.
Chris, prime Xavi?
Yeah. I saw someone this week say that Scholes isn't fit to lace his boots, which I thought was a really... I completely disagree with that. I think Scholes is a wonderful player. And
fantastic.
I think in a lot of ways they had very different careers because Xavi was surrounded by brilliance constantly, whereas I think Scholes often inspired the brilliance in his teams.
Dave, let me guess what you're going to say.
I think it's quite interesting. I kind of go against what Chris just said there. I'd say Xavi had a better peak and in a way ran that show for that Barcelona team, but That only happened, you know, you go into 2000 and, you know, when Guardiola took over, let's say, that's when Xavi started really kicking on. Before that, yeah, he was a very, very decent player, but that wasn't in his peak. He wasn't dictating games. He wasn't the pinnacle of that team. You were looking at the likes of Ronaldinho, where the ball was going to. It wasn't going through Xavi. And then when Pep came, obviously Xavi was the main man. I think in their prime, I think Xavi was more dominant and would have more influence on a game. But then you'd look at Paul Scholes' evolution from a goal-scoring midfielder to a dictator. You'd want that in your team. So it's a difficult one, but ultimately you'd want both in the same team in a 4-3-3 with Michael Carrick in behind or Sergio Busquets, whichever way you want to go.
For the record, I wasn't saying that Xavi wasn't brilliant. Yeah. I was just saying that he was surrounded by brilliance.
Hmm. No, but that, so I going back to
I don't think he necessarily had to raise the level of those around him. He was brilliant and then also benefited from the fact he had brilliance around him.
So I'd say that he was the better player at the same time. So he didn't get brilliant until Pep Guardiola. I don't think he was at that level, anywhere near that level of running games, of dictating the play until the Pep team. I think in the Rijkaard team, he wasn't as influential. I don't think he was first choice. You had the likes of Deco in there that were, you know, starting ahead of him.
Because he was surrounded by brilliance.
The final question this week, bringing to an end this week's Q&A podcast, is a little preemptively festive. It's from the Rob Meister. Always enjoy it, Rob's questions. He says, what movie are you most looking forward to watching over the Christmas holidays?
Over a month away.
But I mean, I know my answer already.
You're going for a month away?
Yeah, I know what I'm watching. It's the movie I watch every Christmas, the one I always look forward to watching. It's a classic, starring one of the greatest actors of all time. It's Jingle All the Way. Probably the best Christmas movie.
That's not true. It's not the best Christmas movie.
It is amazing.
Home Alone?
I mean, Home Alone. It's done, mate. It's finished, Home Alone.
Merry Christmas, you filthy animal. Yeah, and a happy new year. Come on.
Home Alone is very good, yes. But the one I'm most looking forward to watching again is Jingle All the Way. For me, that's the best Christmas movie. I know it's not
Muppet's Christmas Carol?
Yeah, it's a good film. It's good.
Hey, Muppet's Christmas Carol is fantastic.
Yeah, it's good, you know?
I feel like The Great Escape takes on a much more important poignancy this Christmas.
But Chris, the problem with that movie is they're not all wearing their poppies.
It's true. That is the main problem. Dave, what movie are you most looking forward to watching over Christmas? Is it the Muppets Christmas Carol? A Wonderful Life? Yes.
Is it Sparkle Horse 3?
Please don't be a pawn. Please don't be a pawn.
That is a route. That is a potential route.
I quite like Home Alone. Die Hard.
That's a great answer.
Just for clarification, you mean the Macaulay Culkin one?
Yeah. For clarification, you did say Home Alone, not Homo Alone. I just want to be sure about this.
Die Hard, Lawrence.
Die Hard is a great answer. That's a manly Christmas
again,
movie.
Just to check. Bruce Willis version.
So many double meanings.
I have to clarify which Bruce Willis version, because we all know about that mistake he made.
Is Die Hard 2 Christmas as well? No? Yes.
Isn't that the Hard B?
That was Die Harder, I believe. Great movie.
I'm sure it was.
Die Hard, Dave's going for a great movie. I'll go for Jingle All the Way. I mean, you know, classic. Chris?
What about No One into Love Actually?
I hate Love Actually. I can't stand Love Actually. One of the worst.
What about
films?
The bit where he stands outside the front of the door and he's encouraging her to cheat on his best mate?
Yeah. It's a ridiculous it's film. It's
such a sweet moment.
It's a horribly crafted, cynical look at, I don't know.
Bob Dylan did that much, much better many years ago.
Yeah.
There you go. Chris, Christmas movie of choice, go.
I have never seen Elf, but I have
wow,
to watch
that's
it this
a
Christmas,
great movie.
And I've been told that it's brilliant.
Oh, so
I'll preemptively say that one.
What about The Holiday, starring Jude Law?
All right, can you stop suggesting terrible films? What are you doing?
Okay, sorry.
Are you trying to push Jude Law DVDs?
Jeez. Right, guys, anyway, that is
what
all
about
we
have. What about The Santa Claus? That sorry, is there's all big, there's big we news have... you've missed, Adam. There's
what?
Big news you've missed.
What?
Robbie Keane is no longer an LA Galaxy player. Hello?
He's too busy ordering his Jude Law DVD.
That is all you have time for, guys.
No, come on. Can you not hear me?
I mean, yeah, I can. I mean, so what? Did we think that was going to happen?
No, come on. Come on. Give Chris a little chance to chat about the Polar Express. Come on, that's a good. Gremlins.
Like, you just changed track over the conversation. Chris, a eulogy for Robbie Keane's LA Galaxy career.
He laid a lot of the bricks in the LA Galaxy house. And
I think it was on 34th Street. I mean...
And I think he was one of, if not the best, foreign designated players ever. He really did bring brilliance and quality to Major League Soccer. So I think he can retire with his head held high.
Boom. Robbie Keane, well done. Guys, that brings an end to this
Nightmare Before Christmas
Q&A podcast. Let us know which Christmas movies you're going to be watching over the festive season on Twitter at The Front Three. You can also get your questions in there. Apologies if we didn't get around to your question this week. We'll try and get around to it next week because there's so many good questions this week. For now, though, until Monday, Dave, where can the good people find more of you?
Adam, mate, it's November. We shouldn't be talking about Christmas movies anyway.
You're right. You are right, to be fair.
It's a Wonderful Life. Let's not forget that.
we'll
Dave, don't be such a Grinch.
Very good. Dave.
Well, I get on that vlog. Me and Lawrence go play that primary around school. London.
Discussing the unbeaten teams.
On the Front Three YouTube channel.
See Dave skateboarding as well. He's very good at that. Chris, where can the good people find you?
Loscast, LOZCAST. Thanks.
Sorry, I said Chris, but maybe it's Chris, Los, you know, interchangeable. Kristen, where can the good people find your face and work?
Well, I'll be home for Christmas when Batman returns, and you can find me at KHENEA.
That was a stretch. That was a stretch.
Lethal weapon. You're a lethal weapon, Chris.
Just naming movies now. Guys, thank you so much for listening to The Front Three. We will see you.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
On Monday, until then, have a bloody good week and weekend.